City. It's your man, Big Pat, the voice of your Charlotte Hornets, and you're listening to the All Hornets Podcast Network, presented by Sports Illustrated.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
You are listening to the Buzzer Beaters podcast on the All Hornets Podcast Network. One podcast feed with multiple shows, making sure we cover the Charlotte Hornets from every angle. If you like what you hear, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star review. The All Hornets podcast is affiliated with the Fans First Sports podcast group. On today's episode, we will be diving into the possibility of J.J. Redick being the next head coach of the Charlotte Hornets, and we will be conducting a draft of players from least likely to most likely players from last year's Charlotte Hornets roster to be on next year's Charlotte Hornets roster. With that being said, I'm your host for today's episode, Atticus Ferguson.
And I'm your co-host, Eric Barnes.
Eric, man, it is a great time of year on the sports calendar.
Absolutely.
We've got NBA playoffs. We've got NHL playoffs. As we're recording this, we're about to go into day two of the NFL draft. Unfortunately, we are kind of the SpongeBob meme of Plankton, or sorry, not Plankton, but Squidward looking out of his house and window and looking at SpongeBob and Patrick running around and playing and missing out on the fun. We as Hornets fans are kind of Squidward in that analogy, more oftentimes than not, but nonetheless, there's a lot to watch this year. So it's a very exciting time. How have things been for you?
Things have been good, man. I know I'm getting married in August, so gearing up for that, you know, making sure all my ducks are in a row, work, you know. Obviously, I'm a huge NFL guy, too, so I've been captivated by the draft. You know, went and watched it with my brother back home last night, so that was fun. But, yeah, man, overall, I mean, we're here today to talk Hornets, right? And maybe a former Duke Blue Devil, J.J. Redick. So I'm stoked to talk about that.
Well, let's just do that. Let's get right into that. You kind of hit the nail on the head there. Former Duke Blue Devil, which, you know, obviously if you listen, and Eric, I know you know that I feel some type of way about that, but I'll try not to let that cloud my conversation too much. But based on our conversations that we've had over text, it seems like you've got a lot more thoughts on this and may kind of differ from your opinion, or your opinion may differ from mine, excuse me. So I kind of want to open it up to you to get started here. What are your thoughts on the reports that, you know, he has interviewed, he's going to get a second interview, and just the overall possibility of him potentially getting that job to be the next head coach of the Charlotte Hornets?
Yeah, when it comes to J.J. Redick as the head coach of the Charlotte Hornets, like, it's honestly something I'm really excited about. And let me backtrack a little. So I know you're a big Tar Heel fan, right? I'm also a big Tar Heel fan myself, grew up diehard, you know, and watching him kind of give the Tar Heels a business back in the day or just kind of go off, you know, he was the ultimate villain back in those days. You know, wasn't a big fan, but as time is going on and seeing him in his NBA career, seeing what he's done after basketball with the podcast and his work on ESPN, and he's really captivating on a lot of the stuff that he talked about. So, with all that being said, I would be on board with him being the Charlotte Hornets head coach. And if for no other reason, then he immediately would make Charlotte Hornets that much more relevant on the national scene. And if we're being honest, the Hornets being relevant on the national scene, when was the last time? Maybe the 90s. So, like, that alone, bringing a big star like that in to be your head coach, I would be stoked about. I know a lot of people have their reservations because he hasn't been a head coach. But, I mean, you see guys like Chauncey Billups, Jason Kidd. Everyone always talks about Steve Nash and how he didn't work out. But there are guys like Chauncey, Jason Kidd, like I just mentioned, and many others that aren't top of mind at this moment that have had some sort of success in the league. So I don't think it's like necessarily football where, like, it really pays to be coaching for a while. Like, there's really nuances to it. For the NBA, it's more kind of relationship management and really being able to draw up a good play in the game. So as far as J.J. Redick, the Charlotte Hornets, is he number one on my list? That's up for debate, but would I be happy if he was a head coach of the Hornets? Yes, I would be.
So to touch on the relevancy thing, it's interesting. I do think J.J. Redick would like make the Hornets more relevant on a national scale. But to what degree, I'm not entirely sure. And we really thought that LaMelo Ball would make the Hornets a lot more relevant on a national scale. And to some degree, he has. But I'd say it's been – all in all, it's been relatively marginal up to this point. So I'm not sure. You know, I think there'd be a lot of discussion about it immediately. Like, you know, initially, right after the hire was made, especially with him being someone who's currently in media, it'd obviously be a very relevant point of discussion. But I'm not sure how much more. I still think at the end of the day, winning is what is going to make the Hornets truly relevant on a national scale. But just something I want to touch on there. As far as J.J. Redick as the coach of the Charlotte Hornets, I mean, obviously, me personally, Atticus Ferguson, I prefer not to have anyone who's played at Duke as the head coach of the Charlotte Hornets. But if we're putting that to the side, it is an interesting kind of boom or bust proposition because, you know, you have someone like Jason Kidd who didn't have a ton of coaching experience, who got a head coaching job in the NBA. He's doing well now. His first stop in the NBA was kind of a disaster. Steve Kerr is someone who's come out of the booth to be a head coach. He's done very well. Steve Nash, that was kind of a disaster, but you could, if you wanted to defend Steve Nash, you could place blame on the whole circus of that team, and you know, you could allocate blame to him, you could allocate to the players. I don't know. You could call that a wash if you want to, but that certainly wasn't necessarily a success. So it seems like J.J. Redick's obviously someone who I think he would command respect. I think the players would respect him. He's young enough to where he can kind of relate to them a little bit, but also I think he would be a guy who would be a no-nonsense guy. Like, he's not – just because he's young and likable in the locker room, I don't think the players are going to look at him as, like, an equal in the sense of, hey, we can just walk all over you. We don't want to have to respect you as, like, someone who's a superior in that way. But with that being said, with the new front office, man, you know, this is for the new ownership and the new front office. This is going to be their first major, major, major decision that they all do together as a unit. To hire a J.J. Redick, man, I mean, that's ballsy because, you know, on one hand, if it goes well, you look like geniuses. On the other hand, if it goes poorly, obviously any poor head coaching hire is going to be criticized. But man, if you take a risk, if you hire someone who was seen at risk, as risky at the time of the hire, and that blows up in your face, it just opens you up for that much more criticism. So I kind of want to say I don't know if they'll have the balls to do it. Ultimately, if they have conviction on J.J., I think they're going to do it. But if it kind of comes down to, you know, 50-50 him versus someone else, I think they're going to go with the other guy, but seen as a little bit more of a safer bet.
Yeah, it's one of those things, though. I mean, what do people always say? Sometimes you got to risk it for the biscuit. And in this scenario, I think the payoff could be major. Obviously, J.J., not that being a celebrity is going to make you a good head coach, right? But like I said, it is going to bring more eyeballs to the Hornets. I do agree with you. Ultimately, winning is the most important thing when it comes to stuff like that. But I don't know. I just think it's something that he clearly has basketball knowledge. I mean, he's up there with LeBron. He played in the league for years. And just he's been on First Take. So these executives at these companies are trusting him enough to come on and talk ball. And not that that's a big deal or anything, right? But I don't know. I just have a gut feeling that he would be a good get. And also from a perspective with the Hornets, I think to land a big name like that could in a way be a big deal because, you know, you hear rumors in the past of people turning things down or they don't want to go. To catch a big name like J.J. Redick, it would be a big deal because it can be just as easily said, oh, J.J. Redick getting into coaching but going to the Hornets, he's not going to go to the Hornets. So I do think it would be a big deal for the new ownership to land him. Now, does that come with a lot of risk and a lot of potential blowback? Sure, absolutely. But sometimes you got to go big game hunting, and I think J.J. Redick could be seen as kind of a big game hunting and a big get for the Charlotte Hornets. So we kind of obviously disagree here, but – I think it kind of gives you a good idea. Like, if it were to happen, I think the fan base would definitely be split on that decision.
Oh, it would be a very polarizing hire. I mean, obviously, the Carolina Duke thing, like that component of it, is a very real thing. But also, yeah, I mean, hiring someone out of the booth is going to be there are going to be people like you who love it. And look, JJ clearly knows a lot about basketball. He's a very smart basketball mind. So a lot of people, I don't think it's totally outrageous to be, you know, to find this an enticing proposition. That's not at all what I'm saying, but it is going to be polarizing because you're going to have a lot of people who listen to him, find him intelligent, and are excited about the prospect of him being a head coach, and other people who say, hey, you're the Charlotte Hornets. You don't necessarily always have a horseshoe up your rear end as far as, you know, having great luck goes. Taking a big swing like this doesn't seem like something that maybe an organization with a track record that Charlotte has, maybe that's not the best decision to make. I think the perception would be really interesting, though, as we're talking about that, because – you know, you're talking about on a national level, would people be like, whoa, J.J. Redick, you know, it's interesting because I don't think that J.J. Redick is seen as someone who's going to have a ton of options. I think Shams did mention that he's going to potentially get other head coaching interviews. That doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to have like a realistic – it doesn't mean he's going to be a top priority or a top candidate for any of these other jobs. So I'm not sure that people would say, well, J.J. Redick, why would he go to Charlotte? It's like, well, I think the perception might more so be like, well, that's the only job J.J. Redick was probably going to get. And, of course, Charlotte's the one taking the swing. So, I don't know. It would be interesting to see how the varying reporting and coverage would be on that from a national scale and then within the kind of a smaller scale within the local fan base here. It would definitely be fascinating. There'd be a lot of good discussion about it. I do see both sides. I'm not just trying to play both sides of the fence here. I definitely, because of my personal preferences, honestly, more than anything, don't prefer it to happen. And I just kind of – would prefer they go Charles Lee or someone with more of a proven track record, or, you know, at least Charles Lee, maybe not a proven track record, but, you know, has paid his dues in the coaching tree and worked for a successful organization. That's my preference. But I mean, if you had to make like a top 10 list of guys that the Hornets are interviewing and ask me to be objective about it, I mean, JJ's definitely in the top 10, I think.
Yeah, no doubt. Look, and here's the last thing I will say on it is that, oh, I'm totally blanking right now. I had a great thought, and now it's just gone from sitting there listening to you talk. But with JJ, you know, I just think it's – oh, this is what I was going to say. Sorry for that entire blunder for everyone.
I left you speechless for a second there. It's all right.
Sometimes you just take my breath away. What can I say? but anyway, here's what it comes down to for me when the Hornets front office is looking at it. If you look at this, regardless of blowback or whatever it may be, if the owners and Rick Shaw, Gabe Watson, as well as the rest of the brain trust that they brought in, if they look at J.J. Redick and based off the interviews they have, if they truly believe he is the best candidate, regardless of what blowback is, you hire him. If you think back to the draft last year with Brandon Miller, it seemed like 90% online anyway that it was all Scoot Henderson. We sit here a year later, and I think it's pretty obvious that Brandon Miller was the right selection. At that time, if the Hornets moved in a direction of kind of going with what people wanted, then the Hornets would be in a worse spot today. So ultimately, we're not the ones in those interviews with JJ. We don't know what's going on. But if they truly believe that he is the best candidate to lead this franchise forward, regardless of blowback, you make the decision and you live with the results. And I've got no problem, you know, kind of risking it for the biscuit. So, you know, ultimately, I just hope they make the right decision. But we should find out soon enough here in the next few weeks or month, whatever, if it is Charles Lee. But, yeah, I'm excited to find out who's going to be the next guy for sure.
Last point I'll make, too. I absolutely agree with your assertion that if you have conviction that that's the best candidate, or at least the best candidate who's going to take the job, you make that pick. You don't, because you don't worry about the initial blowback or the initial reaction. You have the long-term view in mind, just exactly like you said with Brandon Miller. If you think this guy is going to win games, get you to the playoffs, and, you know, potentially win championships or something like that, right? You make that pick because the fans who are upset about it initially, they'll be on board by them. Just right. Like, you know, people like myself who were in the Scoot Henderson camp over Brandon Miller. I'm in the Brandon Miller camp now, and I'm very happy. So, you know, if you think they're going to produce the results, because ultimately, as long as you win, that typically cures everything.
Absolutely.
So, if you think this is going to be the guy who's going to bring winning to Charlotte, you make the hire. Because ultimately, it doesn't really matter what the initial reaction is. If everyone loves someone, but they lose and they suck, mm-hmm. you made the wrong choice. And people are going to be much more angry than they are happy long term. So,
honestly, that's what great leadership is about. I mean, sometimes you have to make decisions that aren't popular decisions. And then you just kind of live with those decisions. And then if you end up being wrong, well, at the end of the day, at least you trusted your gut. Now, obviously, we don't know what these guys are thinking in the front office and the owners, but either way, I hope they follow their gut and really, you know, make the decision that fits their vision and of becoming the premier franchise in the NBA.
Yeah. And you know what? Respect to them for casting a very wide net. The name's slipping my mind right now, so apologies. But the female coach who was the G League Coach of the Year, they're interviewing her. You know, they're interviewing JJ. Like, they're casting a very wide net. They're not afraid to interview someone with the fear of, you know, if they potentially hire them, they're being blowback of, hey, this is the first female head coach in the NBA, or this is someone coming out of the booth. Like, they're looking to see, hey, you know, this person has basketball acumen. They seem like they have some qualities to be a head coach. Let's see if they're a fit here. And if they are, we'll deal with the blowback later because we think they can win. So respect to them for at least thinking outside of the box, being willing to interview some, you know, people that they think might be a fit for the job, and you know, not really caring about, you know, some people not loving the optics of the situation and kind of the interviewee pool. So I'm definitely with you there too. So with that being said, Eric, unless you've got anything else to talk about on JJ or the coaching search in general there, I did want to transition into kind of the meat and potatoes of the podcast.
Again,
like we touched on in the interview, we're going to be doing a draft today. The draft will be starting with the players we think are least likely to be on the Hornets again coming into this next season. And at the end, it's most likely. So if you're number one in the draft, we think there's pretty much no shot you're coming back. If you're the last player on the draft, you're a lock to come back. Before we get into this, two things. We did keep off Amari Bailey, Leaky Black, and Nick Smith Jr. from this. Reasons being, they were just drafted. Probably worst case scenario we determined would be that they would be in Greensboro next season, not outright released altogether. So it seemed like going over those three would really be splitting hairs to like see who would be involved in some like unlikely trade scenario. It just seemed like a waste of time and unproductive. So we're going to leave those three guys off of the conversation as well. To determine the draft order, we're going to do a trivia question. I'm going to ask Eric a question. If he gets it right, he gets the first pick. If he gets it wrong,
uh-oh,
I get the first pick. So, Eric, and I'm going to make this very fair for you. I'm going to explain how.
Okay.
It's not going to sound fair at first, but stick with me.
It already feels very unfair, actually. But sure, go ahead.
See, he's got a built-in excuse already if you're not at home. 3-point field goals made in Hornets history.
Okay.
You're going to have to guess who is fourth on the list. However, I'm going to give you the whole top 10 except for who is at number four and see if you can just tell me who number four is.
All right, before you ask me this, I have to ask you something. How did you come up with this question, bro?
So I know I wanted to do something with the – I was thinking about, you know, basic trivia. I was like, oh, let's do 3-point field goals. And I was looking and I was like, okay.
Dale Curry, obviously.
I was like, I don't want to ask who's at number one. I don't want to I was trying to think. I was like, what would make sense? And I was like, let's pick a random number. But I was like, well, that seems kind of egregious. So I'll give you some other names around it, and then you should think – you should be able to just say, okay, who else is on the top 10 list that he didn't mention? But maybe you won't. I also picked a
name. Look, let's make this a little harder. I don't want it that easy. Just give me the top five. Just give me the top five. You don't have to give me 10, which I'm sorry you had to prep for that. That's okay, you know. Little audible, I can see anything in the pod right now.
All right, let's do the top five. That works, though. All right, so, again, you're going to have to tell me who number four is. I'll read the top five. Obviously, okay. I will omit who number four is, and then you'll tell me who you think that is.
All right.
Number one, Kemba Walker. Number two, Del Curry. Number three, Terry Rozier. And then number five is Miles Bridges. Eric, who is number four on that list with 681 made 3-point field goals with the Charlotte?
Oh, my goodness, bro. I'm just going to say LaMelo Ball, the franchise.
LaMelo is seventh. Number four is Marvin Williams.
Oh, yeah, of course, bro.
That's why I was going to give you the top 10, because I thought Marvin, like, it makes sense when you see him, but he's not the first person to jump, you know, to mind either. So I was going to give you the full top 10 because I was still thinking there was a chance you wouldn't say Marvin. Again, you see him on there and you're not shocked. You're maybe a little surprised that he's that high.
See, LaMelo would have been fourth if he was playing 90% of his games. So, like, me answering this incorrectly isn't my fault. Obviously, I need LaMelo to get out on the floor, not for the sake of the Hornets, but so I can get some of these trivia questions right, man.
Right, right. And some might say you pay attention to the Hornets and should know that he hasn't played enough to be up there, but that's not that's not what I would say. That's just what some listeners may be thinking.
Some would absolutely say that.
Some would. All right, so I guess it's funny that we even did this because off air we were both saying that we probably had the first pick the same on both of our boards, but Marquise Bolden. I don't see much of a scenario. I mean, he showed some flashes. He was playing well in the G League, obviously. I just don't see much of a scenario where he's back on the team next year.
Just not an NBA player. Not good enough. I can see against him, just, you know, not very super athletic, not very tall, not a shooter. Big guy. Great college basketball player, or good. But, hey, I don't know. If J.J. Redick is the coach, maybe he's like, hey, we got a dookie here with Bolden. Maybe he comes back. I mean, anything's possible.
Yeah, I guess that is the kind of the one-off that could help.
The Hail Mary attempt. Absolutely.
I could see the Hornets drafting a center, signing kind of a lower-end free agent center or like a veteran center who kind of takes a spot. Yeah, I don't think there's much more that we need to really say on that. I could see Bismack Biyombo maybe coming in. I've vouched long for the Hornets to bring him back. That's a whole other topic we don't have to get into. But, yeah, I don't see many scenarios where it's likely that Marquise Bolden is back with the Charlotte Hornets. So he is the first pick of the draft. Congratulations to Marquise Bolden. He is the first pick of the draft. You can cut it there and add no more context.
That's big time for Bolden, man. Number one pick. Let's go. And speaking of the big two, I mean, the Hornets still have James Naji stashed overseas as well. So that could be an option next year. I mean, I guess we'll see how that plays out. But, yeah, obviously for Bolden, this is kind of a layup. Like, he shouldn't be back next year.
I didn't even think about James Naji. So there you go. That's a pretty significant reason as well. There you go. All right, Eric, second pick of the draft. Who you got?
Okay, number two. This one, this could be controversial for some people out there. And even for my fellow co-host Atticus, because I know he's a big fan of this guy. But I'm going to have to go with JT Thor. I mean, he was in James Booknight and Kai Jones' class, so at least he's lasted longer than the first-round picks in that draft class, I guess. But, I mean, the truth is, you know, we're, 3 years in now, and, like, I guess I could say there's minor improvements I've seen him made, but he really just kind of looks like the same guy he was when he was drafted. And he's still super young, so by no means am I saying that, like, his NBA career is over, he can't make it. But to this point, he just really hasn't shown enough to where it's like, hey, we need to keep this guy because he's going to turn into something. Number two, I've got JT Thor because, you know, he's really just not cutting it at this point.
Eric knows I'm a huge JT Thor guy. I stumped him on the trivia. He made it personal and put JT Thor at two. You see what the dynamic of this podcast is. You see who the adult in the room is, and you see, you know, who maybe not so much. No, I had JT Thor at number three on my list. I'll get into who I had at two next, obviously, since I'll have the next pick. I had JT Thor at three, unfortunately. He seemed to regress pretty noticeably on the defensive end. His shooting percentages, I was looking at his basketball reference again before we jumped on here. Shooting percentages were slightly up. Free throw percentage was down. Total rebounds about the same. Points per game slightly down. There was a lot of potential that he flashed. Maybe a lot's too strong of a word. He flashed the potential at the end of last season when he was getting some minutes. So there was a little bit of momentum there to finish the season. Looked like he had packed on some muscle over the offseason when we saw him at Media Day. Mm-hmm. I thought this my JT Thor stock that I had purchased was as high as ever, and then it came crashing down. There just never was really much of a leap. And defensively, there seemed to be a regression, if anything. So the only reason I had him at 3 and not 2 is just because, you know, he was a second round draft pick. He is cheap. There are some things there. There are some traits that get you excited with a young player. He's not, you know, in a vacuum, there's no downside to keeping him other than the fact that it is a roster spot. And there may just be something that the Hornets want to do with that roster spot more. But again, just in a vacuum, having JT Thor kind of on the bench isn't doing any harm necessarily. But yeah, I mean, the writing's kind of on the wall. That whole draft class was a disaster. There may just be a feeling in the front office that they want to move past that 21 draft class entirely.
Yeah, and look, and like I mentioned, he could still end up panning out, but even if he ends up panning out, he's probably still 2 to 3 years away from panning out. So it's one of those things that, in a way, similar to Malik Monk, not exactly by any means, but you know, if he does go to a different place and he ends up working out, it's just it took too long for it to work out with the team that drafted him. But the thing working in Thor's favor is he's 6'9", and he's not bad at playing defense. So that's why he's stuck around as long as he has. If he's back next year, would I be mad? Absolutely not. But it's just becoming one of those things. It's kind of just like, what's the point? Because we're not really seeing that kind of steady progression that you're looking for.
Yeah, I mean, if he's gone next season, I'll understand. I'll be a little upset just because that was my guy. Not, you know, I tried to call a diamond in the rough there, and I've just grown a fandom of him. But objectively, I'll totally get it. I'll understand it. I'm not going to be like upset with the front office or calling for people's jobs to be on the line or anything of that nature, of course. So, yeah, again, like I said, you had him at 2. I had him at 3. We pretty much agree there. I do want to tell you who I had at 2, though, and get your thoughts.
Hey, it's your pick. So you had the third selection. So let's just hear the third selection here.
So this is who I had 2. This will be 3 on our overall buzzer beaters draft. Bryce McGowan's.
Okay.
First and foremost, well, no, we'll get into this later just in case he's drastically further down the line. But, I mean, yeah, it's pretty simple. There's a log jam at guard. He really hadn't found minutes last year outside the times where the Hornets were getting, like, comically depleted by injuries. Obviously, the Hornets are always depleted by injuries, but I kind of categorize the two stages of Hornets injuries by, like, injured, where, like, you have LaMelo and Mark and, like, another guy or two out versus, like, comically injured when you're rolling out a starting five that looks like it was, like, you're playing a game of 2K and you lost a bet and have to use some, like, you know, absurd starting five. So he was really only getting minutes in the comically injured lineups for the most part there towards the end of the season. The writing just seems like it's on the wall. He hasn't made much of a leap. I don't think he's going to be out of the NBA entirely. I'm sure someone would pick him up and like put him in the G League or at the end of the bench, but there just doesn't seem to be much more room, you know, to for growth here in Charlotte. And it kind of feels like he's hit his ceiling.
Yeah, I mean, McGowan's, it's tough because, you know, he's got good size for a guard, but he comes in as a scorer. And to this point on the floor, I mean, he looks fine, but he's just not assertive enough. It's like he's kind of doubting himself a little. So it's just tough. I could see him come back, but it's definitely kind of at that point, like, we got to start seeing some sort of real progression or, you know, you kind of got to move on. But it's also tough because in the G League, like his rookie year, I mean, he was absolutely balling out. But in the NBA, I think there's something there, but it just doesn't seem like he has that full confidence yet of like, I truly belong. So, yeah, like Bryce, but again, you got to see something or like, you know, with a team as bad as they were, like if you're okay bringing back guys that are like your 8th or 9th guy, then you're not really going to get to where you want to go. So, like, I would understand it.
Yeah, the last thing I'll say on this, he showed some flashes early. There just hasn't really been anything to make you overly excited about Bryce McGowan since. And at the end of the day, I'm not saying you haven't done this, but just in general, you have to kind of get over the initial honeymoon phase you had with him and just realize, hey, this really isn't cutting in. There's really nothing special here. So yeah, I had Bryce McGowan's next off my board. All right, so we're at pick number 4 overall. Eric, who do you have?
So this pick is probably going to be similar to the Michael Penix pick last night for the Atlanta Falcons. This could send some shockwaves. I don't know if people are really going to be expecting this, but with the fourth overall pick of, you know, most likely to not be back with the Hornets next year, I'm going to have to go with Miles Bridges.
Whoa.
So all these other guys we've been talking about have kind of been into rosters, you know, kind of cutting dead weight, you know, type of thing. But the truth is Miles Bridges is kind of the opposite. He's, and not saying that he's this unbelievable all NBA player, but he will have suitors in the offseason. There are people that will be willing to pay him money to come play basketball in their city. And with the Hornets, that, you know, with Bridges and the Hornets, they've kind of been saying, like, yeah, we want him back. He wants to come back. And I definitely think that could be in the cards. But look, he's an unrestricted free agent. You know, if a team comes out and throws a lot of money at him, you know, the Hornets can't match. He could just walk. So with that being the case, like, the truth is he could actually, outside of like a Bolden, right, a Marcus Bolden, he could end up being like a number one type of player on this list because he's an unrestricted free agent and he'll have suitors, I'd imagine. So Miles Bridges, he can play, but also he's kind of always been like a tweener type of player. Like, he's a three, is he a four? I know the NBA is becoming a little more positionless now, but it's one of those things, like, how does he fit into your vision and your plan of becoming that premier franchise in the league? He can obviously play, but are you going to play him at the four? He's really too short to be playing the four on a night-in, night-out basis. Are you going to play him at the three? I mean, I guess you could do that, but, like, does he – shoot as well as you want? I don't know. It's tough. I mean, I'm in the camp of bringing him back, but either way, I do think there is a real chance that he's not playing basketball in Charlotte next season.
Yeah, so here's where you and I will disagree pretty drastically. To give context, this is a 15-man draft with the three rookies, not including Brandon Miller, that were excluded from this draft. I had Miles Bridges on my big board at 11. So out of 15 players, I said he was the 11th most likely to return. Now, if you were to say, and this is a little bit of a different conversation, if this was a 15-man draft of most realistic scenarios in which they're not back, obviously there's a realistic scenario with Miles Bridges being an unrestricted free agent, right? Like, it's pretty obvious to, like, understand the pathway and for which he's not back on the team. Someone else just gives him a bunch of money, and it's more money than the Hornets are willing to offer, and he leaves. However, I don't think anyone's rushing to give Miles Bridges substantially more money than what the Charlotte Hornets are going to offer. I think the only team that's going to outbid the Hornets potentially would be the Detroit Pistons. I think it would be marginal to, you know, I think it'd be marginal at best, maybe a little bit above marginal, whatever that would be. You know, my words aren't firing right now like they need to be. But I think ultimately, if Detroit offers him like $3 million more a year, $2 million more a year, something in that neighborhood, I think he's taking less to come back to Charlotte. I think he's happy here. I mean, I don't think it's smoke when he's been talking about how much he enjoys playing here, how much he wants to be back. I think that's all genuine. I think there's an appreciation for the franchise sticking with him. You know, during all the off-the-court issues he's had, I think he enjoyed playing here regardless. I think the offseason, when he got into the legal trouble for the first time, there was already a deal in place between him and Mitch Kupchak to return. It seemed like he had interest. It seemed like the Hornets had interest. I don't think that interest has really gone anywhere. Sorry, I had one more point to make. What was that going to be? But, yeah, ultimately, I think the interest in coming back is real. I think when at the deadline, when he and Rich Paul – made it known that they were not going to accept a trade anywhere else, I think that made it pretty obvious that they wanted to stay in Charlotte. The counter argument to that would be, I guess, that, hey, Miles wants to stay in Charlotte to keep putting up good numbers to make sure he really cashes in on a payday. But ultimately, I feel as if they knew that there wasn't a path to return. He would have gone and played for a contender for half the season, the ring chased, versus wasting half of a season in Charlotte on a team that clearly was going no year in short fashion.
Well, I think the counterpoint would be, do we really know how much this front office likes Miles Bridges and their vision for him? Because it seems like from the reports that we heard, they were interested in trading him. he stopped that. Him and his agent. My theory is that he wants to re-sign with the Hornets and cash out the most money he can, because that's probably the team that's going to pay him the most money, because his agent knows they don't want to lose Miles Bridges for nothing. So he gets his money, and maybe he stays, or maybe he gets traded, whether it's next year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever. But they're trying to secure cash is the way I see it. But either way, I don't want to spend too long on this, because we do have more guys to get to. But obviously, like we've been saying, going back 6-7 months, the Miles Bridges situation is really the most fascinating thing going on with the Hornets front office, really, for the past year, 2 years, 3 years.
So the last thing I'll say on it is I think – counterpoint your counterpoint, sir. I think that there – this is obviously just speculation. I feel as if there was some sort of mutual understanding and perhaps some sort of direct communication, speaking directly about this, between Rich Paul, who is, again, Miles Bridges' agent, and the Hornets front office. I think there is an understanding that there's a mutual desire to proceed with each other in the future. There may not have been I'm not even saying that there was a handshake agreement like that, hey, he's going to be back and these are roughly going to be the terms, right? Now, that could have been, perhaps, but I think there was an understanding of, hey, we have interest, we, the Hornets front office, have interest in bringing you back, and Miles Bridges, hey, I have interest in returning. And there was a strong enough possibility. Each side assessed that the possibility was strong enough to, of a long-term kind of marriage here, for him to return and finish out last season with the Hornets. That's my thought on it. I think, barring any, additional off-the-court legal issues or something like that, something unforeseen like that, I think Miles Bridges is back next year. I'm very confident in saying that. So,
for the record, if I was betting, I would bet that Miles is back, just for, at the minimum, for the reason I mentioned, because I think the Hornets front office, they come from, the financial world, and they're not in the business of losing valuable assets for nothing. So I think they are going to bring him back. And I do think that that does give him some sort of leverage throughout negotiations. But we could talk about that situation for hours, but because it is so fascinating. But it'll definitely be interesting to follow, as we move into the summer months here.
All right. Next pick. We'll fire through some of the upcoming picks a little bit more quickly. Obviously, that Miles Bridges one was a shock, and that's a very interesting situation, so I wanted to spend some more time on that. My next pick, a little bit of a fan favorite. That may be too strong. He's a little bit of a darling with the fan base when he was brought on late in the season. Pokuševski.
Okay.
He was number 4 overall on my board. That makes him the number 5 overall pick as to where we're at right now in the draft. Don't need to spend a ton of time on that. I mean, he was more productive than a JT Thor. He probably cost more. He's going to cost you more than JT Thor is going to cost you. Obviously, if you want to re-sign him, I think he did enough to garner some sort of value on the open market. I imagine someone gives him a contract. He clearly proved to be an NBA player. I'm not saying a high-level NBA player, but clearly belongs on the court. Prove that he's an NBA player. But I just, he was productive. If he's brought back, under the right context, I'm not furious or anything, but he didn't do anything, I don't think, to display that he's a priority for this front office in the offseason by any means necessary.
Yeah, I mean, Poku, it was kind of a fun thing. He came and joined all his Thunder buddies, which is Thunder buddies. But it was cool for the stretch, and I think there is a chance he comes back. But, yeah, they just picked him up for the rest of the season. Kind of was another interesting guy to pick up and kind of to continue to foster a new culture, if you will. But, yeah, I mean, he's obviously not on a longer-term deal, so I definitely think he's kind of, on that short list of guys that are most likely to be out of town and not be with the Charlotte Hornets as they start the 2024-2025 season.
All right, easy enough. Eric, you have the 6th overall pick. Who you got next?
So 6th overall, and in my heart of hearts, I think this guy's back just because of what he brings to the court, and, he's a specialist. I'm going to go with Davis Bertāns, or Davis Bertāns.
That's who I had next on my list too.
Right, and I think his three-point shooting is very valuable, just especially if you're playing him in spurts, say 15, 20 minutes a game. Even especially when the Hornets are hopefully healthy, getting 15 minutes of a three-point sniper is valuable. But really this is a contract thing. He's due $16 million, and there's a clause in his contract that if the Hornets cut him, he doesn't count $16 million against the cap. It counts $5 million against the cap. So I think with the finances, along with the fact that he's kind of a – he is a specialist and he's really good at what he does, but he's not really helping you on defense and in other areas. But, yeah, at this point in the draft, like, he makes the most sense in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, with Bertans, I feel like he's more likely to be moved at the trade deadline next year than he is in the offseason. However, if we're making a draft of pretty much all the Hornets players who could be moved during the offseason, I definitely think he's still pretty high on that board. I mean, a pretty one-dimensional scorer, you know, with just kind of shooting the three-point shot for the most part. I mean, he rarely scores in the paint, rarely cuts to the basket. He will at times, but he's primarily making his money at the three-point line, and I don't think he's nearly efficient enough at this point in his career to really be a priority to maintain long-term. You know, he's a nice veteran piece that came along in a trade, and it's fine having him. And if he, you know, if you need to cut him for cap purposes, or if you need to trade him as an expiring, you know, that's the thing. He is an expiring contract this year. So even though I think it's more likely he gets moved at the deadline, you know, maybe some team becomes a seller early in the offseason and just wants to dump a contract or something like that. And, you know, Charlotte and this other, you know, random team swap contracts or something. So I don't know. His contract will be attractive. I don't think he's in the long-term plans for the Hornets by any means. Like next year, whether he gets traded in the offseason or whether he gets traded at the deadline, I don't expect him on the Hornets past this upcoming season.
Yeah, I mean, definitely not a long-term piece. Kind of like I've said multiple times, you know, he gives you that three-point shot. But, yeah, it long-term, he's obviously – it doesn't seem like he's going to be around. All right, so whose pick is it? Is it my pick or is it your pick?
It is mine. You just you picked Bertans, but I did say that he was my next pick as well.
Okay.
So we're on pick number seven.
It's getting tough now. I mean, I'm marking these players off the list. Like these now, it's getting pretty tough.
Yeah. It is splitting hairs a little bit as we get further down the list, and obviously it goes without being said, but like we don't think that all of these guys are gone. Like we're doing the most likely to be gone. Obviously, the Hornets aren't just going to gut their entire freaking roster. Right. But it is kind of splitting hairs a little bit. But my next pick, 7 overall, Nick Richards. Nick showed us some nice flashes this season. You know, he was thrusted into this starting role most of the time because Mark Williams was injured. So, you know, people kind of bang on Nick Richards kind of hard, nudity. But they kind of bang on Nick Richards hard here. And – to be fair, you know, you're throwing him out there to start, and he's really supposed to be a backup by design. So it's a little unfair to criticize him when he's playing a much bigger role than he ideally on paper should be asked to. I think he definitely proved to be a solid, athletic backup center. There are times where he does some things that are kind of wonky and kind of has poor hands and kind of scratch your head a little bit. But at the same time, I say all that to say, I could see the Hornets potentially drafting a center. And then at that point, you know, with Mark Williams, who is kind of supposed to be your center of the future, but then maybe a new center where it's like, are you going to have two ideally elite centers, or is that your center of the future? That's a whole interesting situation that we could run into. If that occurs, you know, Nick Richards is kind of on the outside looking in, and he's probably too good of a player to, he's definitely too good of a player, in my opinion, just to be totally riding the pine behind, two guys that you drafted who are young that you're trying to mold and develop there. So ultimately, also another thing too to mention, you know, there was some chatter about Nick Richards potentially being moved at the trade deadline. So there is interest from other teams. It's not all just about the Hornets. It is about other teams having interest and, you know, guys obviously not being untouchable. So I think there's enough interest with Nick Richards around the league that the Hornets could say, hey, you know, nice player, but we can extract some value and we're not totally in love with being married to him long-term. So Nick Richards, whether it's this offseason, obviously that's what the draft is. I wouldn't be totally stunned if he's moved this offseason. I'd be a little surprised. But at some point I could see him getting moved, which makes it obviously, you know, he's one of the more likely players to be moved this offseason if we're talking about the whole roster.
Right, yeah. Nick was kind of – he was toward the top of my board at this point in the draft, but really because of the last point you mentioned, you know, the trade chatter around the deadline, you know, if they do end up deciding to bring James Nnaji over, or if they do to end up drafting another center – for whatever reason, it's just one of those things where, you know, Nick Richards, Is he like a fantastic All-NBA player? Obviously not, but he serves a role and he plays a position and he protects the rim that is going to be valued around the league. So, like, he will have trade value. And if there is somehow a trade that pops up and say he's a throw-in in it or whatever it may be, I could see him being moved. But he could easily be back. But, of course, at this point in the draft, you know, somebody's got to be picked. So, at this stage, it's Nick Richards.
All right, Eric, you've got the 8th overall pick. Who you got?
All right, so 8 overall. It's getting tough. Actually, this one, it really isn't that tough. I'm going to go with Micić at 8 overall. And I think he'll end up being back, of course, but I think the reason he would leave is, say, he's came to the NBA, tried it out. Like, cool, like, it was my first year. I was a rookie. I got traded midseason. Now I'm on the Hornets, and I'm going to be a backup point guard to LaMelo Ball. Trey Mann's also here. How many minutes am I really going to get? So maybe, you know, he just thought, you know what? I went to the NBA. I tried it, and I really just want to go back home. So he just goes back home. So that's why 8th overall, I'm going with Micić here.
All right. So he was 2 away. The person I had next on my board, who I will now say, is Cody Martin. That's probably a little bit interesting.
That is interesting.
He did just get a new contract relatively recently. Look, obviously the Hornets have kind of a logjam at wings, like we've mentioned. You know, they could potentially even draft another wing perhaps, which really dries up minutes for different guys there. Injuries have been the biggest thing with Cody Martin. He was playing really well this season towards the end of the year before he got injured again and was out for the rest of the season, missing the last few weeks of the year there. I could see the Hornets just kind of wanting to cut ties with another injury-prone player. You know, they've got a bunch of stars who are injury-prone. You don't necessarily need role players who are also injury-prone because that hurts your depth when, you know, you can't be top-heavy, you can't have depth. So, you know, they could kind of look to cut ties with him. And then at the same time, you're looking at someone who's injury-prone that you maybe want to cut ties with. Cody Martin's proven to be a pretty solid 3-and-D player. You know, you saw his brother go to Miami, and they extracted a lot more value out of him than the Hornets were getting. Maybe other teams look at that and think they could do the same thing, especially a player in Cody Martin who has played a lot better in Charlotte than Caleb Martin played in Charlotte. So, you know, he could be attractive to some contenders. He could really be attractive. This isn't just about the Hornets. It's about other teams potentially finding value in him. And then, obviously, he's not untouchable with the Hornets, and there are some reasons that maybe they've grown tired of him and want to move off of him. So he would be next on my list. I'd be a little surprised if he's gone this offseason. I'm not shocked if he's not a part of the Hornets' long-term view, which, again, obviously, if you're not in the long-term plans, you know, short term, you could be out sooner than you expect at times.
I don't know, man. I kind of agree or not agree. I disagree on Cody Martin at this point, because I think it's been said over and over again by Coach Cliff, and obviously Cliff is out of the door, but he's the best defender on the roster. And are the Hornets really in a position to get rid of, you know, their best defender? I don't think so. So for me, I would have had him go a little bit later, but I do understand it. Like, he could extract value in a trade, if that makes sense. But, yeah, for me, I would have had Cody a little bit lower.
That's fair. Yeah, and, you know, Micić is just kind of newer. I don't see him being someone that other teams – it's not just about the Hornets of that situation. With Micić, I don't see him being a guy that other teams are calling for much. He'd probably have to be more of like a throw-in in a trade, kind of like he was to Charlotte, honestly. I don't want to over dissect the probability of Cody Martin being moved versus Micić, but that's just kind of my thoughts there. So you've got, so I just went with Cody Martin. So then you've got the next pick. Who do you have next here?
All right. Before I say this next pick, let's review who's left on the board, and you let me know if I miss anyone. I've got LaMelo Ball, Brandon Miller, Mark Williams, Grant Williams, Trey Mann, and Seth Curry.
Yep. That's it.
Okay. So, what is this, the 10th pick?
Not the 10th. I was writing down on another page, and I flipped my notes to the next page and lost count. So, we'll just – we're getting towards the end. It's one of the closer picks towards the very end. That's what it is.
Well, either way, this is not very likely at this point. I'm going to go with – oh, this is tough. I'm going to go with Seth Curry.
That's who I had next on my board as well.
Yeah, it was a tough between him and Trey Mann, but, oh, God, now I'm sitting here thinking about it, and I almost want to switch it.
You said Seth. You gave the card.
No, it's fine. I'll actually say Steph because the more I think about it, I think that makes sense. I think Seth will be back, right? But, yeah, I mean, maybe, you know, he can shoot very well still. So, maybe, again, at this point, a lot of it's trades. Like, none of these guys are going to be cut. So, maybe, like, a team really values his three-point shooting in the offseason. And they're like, hey, we would like him in a throw-in or something along those lines. But, yeah, I'll go Seth Curry here. I do anticipate he'll stay just for, you know, the homecoming end of his career thing. But, yeah, at this point in the draft, Seth Curry.
Yeah, I'll just say my bit and move to the next part. I just had written down the Charlotte Ties, that's a real component in this. Obviously, his father, Del Curry, legendary player on the broadcast booth with Bally and Eric Collins and Ashley Chamedy, brought in to be a veteran leader with Grant Williams. Him and Grant both seem to really embrace that and enjoy it. I think, if anything, he's more likely to be moved next year. So I guess it's not, you know, a 0% chance, but I'd be pretty surprised. It'd be just kind of weird to have brought him in for such a short stint. I don't see much of a realistic scenario where he's moved this offseason. So that brings me to the next player in the draft, Trey Mann. That was who was next on my board. I didn't just steal that from you there. Basically, just I think his ceiling is kind of, well, maybe not ultimate ceiling, realistic ceiling. He's kind of the young bench point guard of the future. He's going to be the leader of the bench unit, you know, be LaMelo Ball's backup. LaMelo Ball's, even if he isn't nearly as injury prone as he has been, probably going to miss some games. Just if nothing else, you know, if he ever kind of tweaks something or has something sore, the Hornets will probably be cautious and sit him out for a few games. So, you know, he's shown that he can start and he's comfortable starting games, and he's got some chemistry with the starting unit from this season. But I think ideally he's going to be the point guard of the future off of the bench. Really, the only scenario I see him getting moved this offseason is if there's an unexpected, like, relatively big to big trade that the Hornets are involved in that requires the Hornets to throw in real, like, valuable assets who aren't, like, kind of middle bottom tier assets. Like, this is something that, not that Trey Mann's a made man in the NBA, but you know what I mean? Kind of like a much more of a big name trade than we're anticipating at this current time.
Which is basically where we are in this draft. Like, you know, these guys are coming back for the most part, like you would think, right? So a lot of it is just going to be like trade through and type stuff.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. Next pick. Next on your list. I'm up, right?
Yep. Yep.
Okay. So I'm going to count backwards to get us back on track with a number. So I got four people left on my board. I got LaMelo Ball, Brandon Miller, Mark Williams, Grant Williams. So that would put this at the 12th pick.
Yep.
With the 12th pick, I'm going with LaMelo Ball.
Whoa. What?
And let me explain, okay? What? Let me explain, because that's crazy. I get it. That's crazy. So let me explain.
Okay, go ahead. Let him cook.
So Brandon Miller, 0%. He's going to be in Charlotte next year. They're not trading him.
Whoa, like, spoiler.
He's coming back.
Go ahead.
This is just me getting to it, right? So Mark Williams, he's not being traded. He was injured this year. I have a theory that it wasn't as bad. I don't know. This is all just a theory, a gut feeling that wasn't as bad as it was. This is not reporting or anything like that. He's not going anywhere. He's the center, at least for the foreseeable future. He's a starter. Grant Williams, I think he's a big leader in the locker room now, and what he brings to the table, like, is rock solid. He's been in winning organizations. Like, I don't think they're trading him either. Like, I think he's here to stay. LaMelo, I do think he's here to stay. I don't think he's actually going to be traded. But of the people left on this list, I don't see Brandon Mark or Grant leaving. I could see maybe a world where the new front office is like, you know what, Brandon is really our number one guy. We love LaMelo, but if we can extract really good value from moving off LaMelo a year or two early or whatever it may be, like, if there's a deal that falls in our lap, like, let's do it. When we start talking about Mark Williams or Grant Williams, I don't see any type of deal like that coming to fruition for the Hornets. There is a scenario where the Hornets could get a crazy offer for LaMelo and say, hey, you know what? If it makes sense and Brandon's our guy, let's do it. So, while this is not likely in this scenario, in this draft, I'm going with LaMelo Ball with a number 12 overall pick.
Yeah, see, I just think there is absolutely no way on earth the current front office, a new front office at that, current owners, new owners at that, have the balls that it would take to move off LaMelo Ball a year.
Well, the return would have to be incredible for that.
I get what you're saying. And like I understand the whole argument for trading him, and not that we're going to dive into that right now.
Look, and again, before you go any further, I'm not saying like they should or like this is what they should do. Just in this exercise of, you know, most likely to not be on the roster, I don't see a scenario where moving Grant or Mark or Brandon makes sense. I could, if I really squint and really try, I could see a scenario where moving LaMelo could maybe slightly make sense. But those other guys, I think, are really true core pieces that they want to keep around. But anyway, sorry to interrupt. Continue.
Sure. I get all of that. If we're talking about realistic things that other people being the front office and the owners might do, I just think there is no way they have the balls. And I don't even see that in a disparaging way, right? Like, yeah. I'm not saying that that's what I would do. I'm just saying, objectively, it would take – it would take some nads to pull that off to do that.
Well, I think what were we talking about earlier, though? Like, if that's what you think is the right decision and you have conviction, you can't really care what other people are thinking.
I don't think there's any way they have conviction to do that. And I know you're not saying they do. I don't think there's any scenario where they have – LaMelo has shown that his ceiling is way too high for you to have conviction. And, like, it's one thing for us as fans to say they should do it or they should think about it, but, like, to really sit there and pull the trigger on that and to make sure, like, you're getting the value, like, how realistic is it that they get the value? Like, if there is a perfect trade out there, like, still, I don't think they have the balls to do that.
Right.
LaMelo was, like, just so you know, LaMelo was the second to last on my list. Like, we can just kind of go through the rest of it now, because the next person on my list was Grant Williams. And I'll kind of just talk about everything that's left here. You know, I think he's, you know, not too expensive. He anchors the bench. He was brought in to be a veteran leader. He's a Charlotte guy. Again, I think that matters.
Fits into a beautiful role.
Yeah, he seems to be all in with the Hornets. He seems to be excited and energized to be home. Like, I don't think he's moving anywhere. But I had him at number 12 overall. So the people I had ahead of him were Mark Williams, then LaMelo, then Brandon. I think LaMelo's second to least likely, just because, you know, he has had injury history and whatnot, whereas Brandon Miller, there's no way on earth you're moving him. Mark Williams, again, he has had injury history, and he hasn't had nearly the flashes as LaMelo. You know, he hasn't been an all-star like LaMelo, so I put him there. I have the like, perceived core as 1, 2, 3 at the end there. But, yeah, Brandon Miller is just there because there's no way he's moving. And then LaMelo Ball again. I think – a thing that people are attracted to with the Hornets is having, you know, is the idea of having two young stars. And, like, if they're ever both healthy together, LaMelo Ball and Brandon Miller are two young stars, and it's so hard to get that. And you've got to have, like, at least two stars to be good in this league, and the Hornets have that. And time will tell if they fit together and what their ceiling is. But ultimately, I just don't think there's any scenario where, you know, you're this early into both of these players' careers and you're just going to blow it up and give up on it when it's so hard to get two players of their caliber on the same roster in general, especially when you're a small market, especially when you have the history that the Charlotte Hornets have. I think there's no way either of those guys are touched.
Well, and again, if we were like ranking assets, then LaMelo would be – all right, let's do inverse. Like, Brandon and LaMelo are obviously the top two, right? I wouldn't have him at 12. It just goes back to the exercise. But, yeah, for me, the next guys would have been – Grant or Mark, that's tough. Probably Grant, because Mark's still so young and he's like a starter. Grant's really more of like that either fourth or fifth starter, or really maybe like your first guy off the bench. And then it would have went Mark and then Brandon. That's how the rest would have went for me.
Well, that is it. This is a fun exercise. I mean, I think you and I mostly agreed across the board, aside from the Miles Bridges thing. And even with that, I saw where you were coming from. Like, he definitely has more of like a understandable, like, I can wrap my head around the scenario where he's moved. Like, he's an unrestricted free agent. Like, it's pretty simple to understand how he would not be back. I just don't think that's going to happen. Aside from that, I mean, the LaMelo thing at the end, we disagreed on a little bit, but ultimately you and I, like, we expect him to be back. And like, it's just more like we split hairs differently, but at the end of the day, it was obviously splitting hairs. So yeah, I think you and I pretty much agreed mostly.
Look, it's the end of April, moving into May. The Hornets obviously aren't playing basketball right now. So, you know, we got to find something to talk about. And this was an awesome, fun exercise. And it kind of brings up, like, interesting points we wouldn't really think of otherwise, some interesting conversation points. So it was fun to do for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, before we just spend any more time kissing each other's asses here, Eric, I appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun. Hopefully next time we're on here, there will be some more exciting developments to talk about. Maybe a Miles Bridges re-signing, maybe a new head coach. You know, these could be exciting. It's been quiet recently for the Charlotte Hornets, but at any moment that could change. So hopefully by the next time we're on here, there's a plethora of new developments to talk about instead of hypotheticals. That'll be a good time. But yeah, Eric, until next time, we will, everyone at home, we appreciate you listening as always, and we will talk to you next time.